We now take you to the Saturday special on AM 1080 and AM 1340. Stay tuned.
Oh, hi, Noah.
Hello, MZ.
How are you?
Doing all right.
Good, yes. You look like you did well. Did well after the festivities last evening.
Party.
Yeah, it was great.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Good morning, Monterey Bay and Silicon Valley. It's MZ welcoming you to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday Special. We expect it to be somewhat spicy today because we're going to be talking about traffic on the west side of Santa Cruz. And I think we can all be on the same page that it needs to be fixed. But let's see what happens in the next 2 hours.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Imagine being held hostage in your own neighborhood. Traffic congestion has risen to unacceptable levels. December 9th, the Santa Cruz City Council will be reviewing the Master Transportation Study. And apparently, the automobile is not in it as a form of transportation. UCSC is working on its long-range development plan. Things can only get worse. This is a big issue and needs big attention, and it's going to get it. This Saturday, on the Saturday Special, join MZ from 10 a.m. to noon with Westside resident John Aird and Vice Mayor of Santa Cruz, Mike Rotkin, as we discuss traffic and its implications. That's this Saturday on the Saturday Special from 10 a.m. to noon on your round and round and round the roundabout radio stations, AM 1080 and 1340 KSCO.
I probably don't need to do this since Rosemary already did, but I will happily welcome Mike Rotkin, Vice Mayor of Santa Cruz, and a number of times a Mayor of Santa Cruz formerly, and John Aird, who is a 20-year resident of Santa Cruz, and the last 14 years of which have been on High Street. Oh my God, what a horror. There couldn't be a more horrible place for you to be living here as far as university traffic is concerned, John?
That's right.
Okay. Well, it's been a problem for probably longer than you've lived on High Street. I mean, probably well longer.
Well, that's true, but I think what should be of great concern to all of us is that the level of impact has gotten decidedly worse over the past 10 years. And in fact, during the time of the current general plan, which is between 1990 and 2005, it's progressively gotten worse every year, despite the fact that the general plan speaks to mitigating strategies which will be used, which clearly are not working.
Okay, now, Mike Rotkin, you have had much to do with general plans over the years because you've been a member of the Santa Cruz City Council on and off, mostly on, for what, 24 years now, something like that?
Yeah, 19 in the last 24 years.
Uh-huh. Okay, and so you have participated in at least one general plan.
Two, I think.
Two of them, okay. All right. And obviously you have thoughts about this, and so you are here to represent the position that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, I'm sure you'll stop me if I say anything that's incorrect. You're here to represent the position that that the recommendations made in the general plan are reasonable, and I think John is here with the opposing point of view.
Well, just to be clear, I mean, recommendations are too abstract. This is always the problem with the general plan. So the issue is, what are we doing concretely to address this issue. And it's also a question not only of what we're doing, but what the university is doing, because there's two players in the city of Santa Cruz doesn't really control the development that happens and a lot of the sort of traffic-causing impacts of the university. That's really beyond, it's not beyond our control to try and respond to it, but we're not responsible for the cause of the problem in that sense.
Sure, no one can argue with that. John, what do you think has not been done that should have been done?
Well, I've got a whole series of objections to really what's happening here. First, the general plan, the current general plan, has a very, very strong and I think appropriate in some regards effort and a series of strategies to get people out of cars and into alternative transportation modalities. The fact is...
Such as buses.
Buses, bicycles, pedestrian,
carpooling,
a whole variety of strategies.
Uh-huh.
My objection is these strategies clearly are not working. I think that they're spelled out. I'm not saying that they're not working to some extent. They're clearly not grappling with the fundamental problems, particularly on the west side. And I object to the fact that there's a $600,000 plus study done between UCSC and the city, a formal study to look at traffic issues in the community at large, and that out of 284 pages, a scant page and a half deals with arguably the collision point in terms of the traffic issues that are generated by UCSC that impact the city, and that is the west side. I feel strongly that the current plan...
So you feel the problem, the main problem is being swept under the rug, as it were? Or?
Well, I think that to have that kind of a study and to ignore the place where the most major impact occurs, I think is ridiculous. And the staff is putting forward their new project list for the city. Virtually all of them have to do with signals and turn lanes. 12 out of 17 priorities identified that are going before the council deal with either turn lanes or signals. None of them deal with the fundamental issues of demand or the or deal with supply. There's something really wrong here. I think if the city leadership was really serious about changing the patterns here, number one, they would have gone back to the general plan and said, why hasn't this worked? Why have we fallen so short of existing objectives in our current general plan? And then at the very least, in this MTST, they would have had an appraisal of that and new strategies put forward. I mean, this whole thing, I think we need a new mentality here in looking at the issues that we're dealing with. An alternative transportation strategy, I think, should be endorsed, should be pursued, but it's simply not sufficient. And we have a problem on the west side in which I just want to read one thing to you. This is the residential livability standard that's articulated in the MTS study that's going before the council next Tuesday. Residential streets are to be safe, attractive places for family life where cars are quiet guests, children freely play, and parents enjoy time saved by sharing child-oriented car trips. Now, this is ridiculous. The noise, pollution, disruption, safety, congestion that is occurring on the west side is far over anything that would be acceptable or meet that kind of standard. And so I think the city, they need to do one of two things. They either need to say, the MTS study we will accept, but it's not complete, and we'll put a priority on this issue, or they simply should reject it as not dealing with the primary issues between UCSC and the local community. You know, when you think about it, UCSC, I mean, a couple of policies that this city could really do if they were serious about this. They could push for a car-free university. I went to a college where they didn't allow students to have cars. You know, that kind of policy.
They were talking about that back in 1969 when I was a student at UCSC.
Well, I mean, if you really want to have an environmentally sensitive community, that's what you do. You say, if you're a student at UCSC, you do not have a car. You get here by public transit. We have housing on this campus. You don't invade and assault the local community to pick up and absorb the transport. We have 15,000 cars go up, up and down High Street every day. 15,000. I mean, it is the loading ramp to the university. Those are not local residents. Those are students, you know, bombing up those streets. And let me just give you one little anecdote as to why I think we got to go through a mind change here. Is I listened, Mike, I don't think you were there, but you might have been. There was this recent thing that went before the Planning Commission on an SRO development up at Cardiff and High Street. Now, this development does not conform with zoning standards, does not conform to...
What's an SRO, excuse me?
Well, it's a...
Single-room occupancy. It's a project that basically, instead of having sort of family-style housing with a couple of bedrooms, the units are basically single-room efficiency-type things that people have argued could quickly become the equivalent of dorms out in the neighborhood.
Right. I don't want to get us into the depth of this thing, except to say that this kind of high density was obviously going to increase traffic further in the West Side neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. That was identified. City planning staff's mitigation for that, their sole mitigation for that, their suggestion that they put forward was to take down the sign, the stop sign at Laurel and High, so that cars could get through faster. Well, that was so laughable, that was rejected.
Laurent and I misspoke. Okay.
So, you know, when you have a planning staff that is, you know, where the priority is and the sort of lack of reality is of that type, you know, we simply... What I expect is this. I expect that this council, and hopefully Mike, with Mike's leadership and so forth, I would think they'd say, look, we've had a certain policy drift here. Some of it's working. Some of it needs to be continued. But we need to also make some radical new shifts to address the priorities of this community. When you really get down to it, what is Santa Cruz? At the core, the heart and blood and soul of Santa Cruz are the residents, the neighbors. It's not business. It's not transients. It's not a foreign policy. It's not the broader environment in some sort of abstract way. It's the residents. They make up this community. And I think we need a policy here which say residents first, neighborhoods first, because if they're healthy, guess what? Then your business community will be healthy, they'll protect the environment, et cetera, et cetera. When you have the degradation that has occurred on the West Side systematically as a result of UCSC growth that's unimpeded and city leadership that doesn't seem to be attentive, you know, that should not happen in this community. It's degrading what Santa Cruz
has made the point, John, that there is really, there's nothing that the city can do with respect to the university, because the university, it doesn't come under any kind of rules.
I don't agree with that. The university does not want to be a poor neighbor. The university does not want a community, and particularly community leaders, of the stature of Mike and so forth that have been around, they don't want those people to be constantly fighting with them. They don't want that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure they care all that much. However, that's another issue, that whole town-gown relationship here. Before the radio program here on AM 1080 KSCO Saturday Special goes much further, I think it's high time that I pointed out that no one said anything about the Eastern Access, which would solve all of this. Whatever happened to the Eastern Access Road that was supposed to go in back at the beginning of the university's tenure here at Santa Cruz? No one even talked about that, and I would think that would be the first thing that would be out of someone's mouth in this type of discussion. Go for it, Mike.
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is that the Eastern Access, and This is not necessarily in the order of importance, but in terms of the issues that arise around it.
Which would connect Highway 1 at River Street directly with the university, so that the traffic wouldn't have to go through the neighborhoods.
Right, but there's a number of problems. First of all, no one wants to pay for this road, and the agreement that the county had with the and the city had with the university when they came here in the 1960s. That the road would be provided ended in 1990, so there's no longer an obligation for any of the local agencies to pay for that road.
Why was it allowed to end in 1990?
That's the agreement. The agreement was signed in 1960 with an end in 1990, so it's like the
The agreement was with the university and with the county of Santa Cruz, not the city?
Yes, in terms of the paying for it and stuff. Secondly, the voters of the city in 1979 in Measure O passed a ballot measure that basically outlawed any urban services passing over the Greenbelt in Poconip, which is where that eastern access would run, is part of that. So basically the voters spoke pretty boldly on that issue.
Did they know that they were speaking on that particular issue?
At the time, people did know. It was quite clear that that was one of the reasons that was added to the thing. Now, more importantly from my... And I would say beyond that, there's still a huge amount of opposition to the idea of putting a road through the Poconip. The neighborhood groups gathered about 900 signatures in support of some solution to this problem, which has certainly brought this, strongly to the attention of the council. Not that we were unaware of it before, but pressured us, I think, to respond to it in a serious way. But within a month of those petitions being turned in, local environmentalists went out and gathered over 2,500 petitions saying, "Don't put a road through the Poconip." So. It's not that idea is not necessarily a popular one. That doesn't mean, sometimes you do things that aren't popular, but that's an important factor here. Again, the citizens having voted on this and still have, and that's not just 1979, that's repeated again by these signatures.
So it's just not an option.
The final thing, I think, and this is important, I don't know that solution technically even solves the problem. I mean, your assertion, Michael, that if the road were built, it would fix the traffic problem. It would dump the traffic onto Highway 9, right in the middle of the 9-1 intersection. And I'm not so sure that wouldn't tie up the traffic coming down Highway 1 already from High Street and from Bay Drive, in such a way that it would actually make the traffic worse. In other words, no study's ever been done to demonstrate that if you take the traffic off of High Street, put it on this Eastern Access Road, run them down to Highway 1 and 9, and now make that intersection much more, just think about this, the timing of the light. Because it's not a cloverleaf, it's not an overpass, it's light with a traffic signal, and they block each other. So you'd have to increase the amount of time people coming down River Street to get onto Highway 1, which is where most of the traffic's going, 1 South. That would then mean that there's less time for the traffic to come down the hill from High Street and from Bay Street, backing that traffic up even further. So I'm not clear that even would be a solution, aside from all the political and environmental limitations on what might work. I do think we need to find solutions to the problem. Let me not even stop without saying that. There's serious, first of all, no disagreement. I hope it doesn't ruin the format of your show that the two guests both totally agree that there's a problem that's grown much worse in the last 10
years. Yeah, I'm getting so disappointed. I was thinking of just shutting off and going home. But, it's not contentious enough.
We'll see what we can do. But at least we certainly agree that the problem's gotten worse over the last 10 years, that it's unacceptable at the current level, that the university, and I agree that the university, although we don't have legal control over the university in some direct way that we can order them what to do about their traffic solutions and parking on campus and those kinds of issues, we certainly have a position of moral suasion. I agree that the campus doesn't want to have a situation where the town is like constantly bad-mouthing them and fighting with them or telling them they're not doing enough. So I think that the city does need to put a lot of pressure on the university and on ourselves to come up with a true alternative traffic solution. Let me just say quickly at the outset, and we'll come back, some of this will get filled in, people will disagree, maybe this is an area where we disagree, we'll find out. One of the real solutions to the traffic on campus is, in fact, trying to get more people not to drive their cars to work there. And I also went to college at a place where for the first 2 years you couldn't own a car at Cornell University. In your upper years, you could have a car, but there's no reason the university can't restrict further than it already has the ability of students to have cars when they come to school here. They have that ability. We can't ban that as a city, but the university certainly has control over what the students do when they come. In I think in New York where Cornell is, it was illegal for students at the campus to have a car anywhere in Tompkins County, the county that surrounded the university. So it wasn't simply a matter of not having a car parked on campus. You couldn't have a car anywhere at school, in effect. And that's certainly a possibility. The campus could, it'd be a political fight because the faculty often want to be able to drive and park their cars, you know, as close to their office as they can. So it would be a political fight for the campus to take this on.
Oh, no question.
But they could ban, for example, not all parking on campus, but parking in the central core of the campus, which would give huge incentives for people to take a bus or an alternative form of transportation. If they didn't feel like if they had to get on a shuttle anyway once they got to campus, maybe their incentive to never take your car to the campus in the first place would be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
We've spent some time looking at alternative. It's not a matter of just getting on an existing city bus, running, you know, stopping every 3 feet for a stop, and then going through the transit center and taking an hour and a half to get to work when you can currently drive there. Traffic is, you know, even with the traffic as bad as it is, in a half an hour or 45 minutes. Instead, you're doubling your traffic time. But to set up express bus routes. But the problem there has been a money issue. That we start every express bus route that we've done. I'm also on the transit board. It's been a huge success. We get people out of their cars, staff people, even faculty, lots of students take these express buses to campus. But right now we have three express bus routes that don't go through the Metro Center, that go directly from neighborhoods and onto the campus. And the problem is that's three express bus routes. We need probably, you know, 20, 30 express bus routes, huge numbers. Then we probably need a guideway up Bay Street, which is, I think, the real alternative. And it's not just up Bay, but through from the east side of town, where the buses have a priority, where they go faster than the cars and eventually find their way over to Bay Street and up onto the campus. And there's room on Bay Street, Bay Drive, where it's four lanes going up the hill there,
right,
to actually create an alternative where people would get on a bus, get to school as fast as otherwise, not pay what's now going to be about $700 a year in parking fees on campus. And the end result of that would be, that would be the kind of concrete, real alternative rather than the abstract, lofty goals that I, you know, our other guest here has
let's
been
get,
complaining
let's
about.
Let's get into that in more
really
detail here after the break.
Out of their cars.
We need to take a break now. This is KSCO AM 1080, the Saturday special, hour number one thereof. We are speaking with guests John Aird and Mike Rotkin about the traffic situation in West Santa Cruz. We're going to come back afterwards at 10:30. We are going to be splitting our programming here for the Metropolitan Opera on AM 1340. But you can continue to stay tuned to AM 1080 if you want to listen to this program. Take it away, Noah.
Hi, this is Don Fredrickson from GotNet. GotNet specializes in business services. Whether you need a T1 or T3 or just a place to host your website, GotNet has a solution to fit your needs. GotNet offers server co-location and custom website development. We have e-commerce servers, streaming audio and video servers, and cold fusion and database servers available to handle your hosting needs. GotNet understands that businesses rely on the Internet, and we work hard to assure fast, reliable service. Call GotNet today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. GotNet.
Ties that nobody will wear. Perfume that nobody wants to smell. Whoa. This year, give the gift that will make the entire family happy. The gift that provides fun, excitement, and travel. This year, give the perfect gift for the holiday season. Give a new RV from RVs of Merit on Scotts Valley Drive in Scotts Valley. RVs of Merit has over $10 million in inventory available right now. So go buy RVs of Merit in Scotts Valley and see just how easy it is to get into a new Winnebago, Airbus, Dolphin, or Coachman. Check out the new diesel pushers, Bigfoots, toy boxes, and splash trailers. You can drive home in a brand new RV from RVs of Merit for monthly payments less than a new car. Or if you select a beautiful new towable, less than $200 a month. This year, give the gift of family fun and travel. Give a brand new RV from RVs of Merit on Scotts Valley Drive in beautiful Scotts Valley. And your whole family will say, ho, ho, ho.
Hello, this is Tom Quinn, the host of Perspectives Radio Show. Every Saturday at noon, we give you cutting-edge news about current events. We interview well-known experts on a variety of issues, so listen in this Saturday from noon to 1 to Perspectives. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday Special, MZ with Mike Rotkin and John Aird. We're talking about traffic on the west side. How can we fix it? no one will disagree that it is problematic. In fact, it's atrocious. It's terrible. It's a big problem. Has been for many, many years. As we are learning, it's very, very complex. Not that we didn't know that it was complex for the last 25, 30 years, but golly, what can we do? Where will students park their cars to get onto the buses? And that's from Erica. That's a fax that we just received here at AM 1080 KSCO. We will be opening the phone lines in just a moment here. In fact, I will give out the phone numbers 479-1080 or 477-1340 if you want to participate in the discussion today with these fine gentlemen, John Aird and Mike Rotkin. And we will be going to the phone lines in just a moment, but we want to give Mike Rotkin an opportunity to finish up where he was, the point he was making before we went to the break. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, just again to get this idea about the express buses. I mean, I think the problem with the master transportation study that John was talking about, and I agree with him, it doesn't adequately address this issue. And he was suggesting there's two alternatives. We could either reject it or we could get very clear about what the next step is to make some of the lofty abstractions in that thing.
I have a
real
question.
If you
reject it, do you have to pay for it anyhow?
Yeah, I don't think at this point we could tell the consultant they didn't do what they were told to do. So we'd be I think it was 500,000, not 600, but not to quibble, but 500 is enough to spend on something that doesn't address the issue that you're concerned about. And that was half paid for by the university and half by the city, but it's still a huge amount of money to spend on a study that doesn't actually address the major problem that I think people were hoping would be addressed by this, the West Side traffic.
Okay, well,
quickly, this idea of a bus rapid transit or a bus guideway or some way to actually get buses so that they actually express buses, get buses to campus in a greater hurry. The whole goal here is to find a way that people get on the bus near their home. That the bus, we now have the technology, and we've used this for the express routes we've already planned, to develop a pin map that shows where people, students, faculty, and staff actually live, and design a bus route around that so that you make maybe three stops on an east side neighborhood and pick up a bus full of people and take them then without stopping all the way through town. So if you have a preemption of signals, some places perhaps where you'd run along the railroad right-of-way through the Neary Lagoon area to get up to Bay Street, mm-hmm. For the east side of town, where you could actually get people to work faster or at least as fast as they currently get there in their cars. And then if you tell people, you know, you don't have the right to park on campus, we have a real alternative for you that actually will get you here in a reasonable period of time, then you can expect that you might actually get some people out of their cars. I think the problem we've had in the past is we say to people, and that's what the study does in the same way again, you ought to get out of your car. Single occupancy use of cars is killing us and destroying our neighborhoods and streets and everything. But if there's not a real alternative, it's, you know, what are people supposed to do? I mean, I'm a healthy young, relatively, I think of myself as young, I'm in my 50s. I still can ride my bicycle up the hill, which I do 2 days a week to school. But what is somebody going to do who lives over on the east side of town when the weather gets bad? I mean, all these kinds of issues. But bicycles alone are not going to sort of solve this problem. And we really need to have a rapid transit system that gives people a serious alternative to taking their car to work. And right now, that's what's happening on High Street. People are taking their cars, and they're saying to themselves, I'm sure, well, I could take the bus, but where does it stop near me? It's going to take me an hour and a half to get there. I'll take my car. And we got to break that down by giving people a real alternative. And this study stops short of saying, where would that bus route run? How much is it going to cost? Who's going to pay for it? What makes this into something real rather than a lofty ambition?
Weren't there parameters set for the study? These are the questions we want answered. And
they were very broad kinds of things of how will we, you know, get people out of their cars, how will we reduce traffic, deal with the increasing traffic congestion problem. They were very broad kinds of goals, which the study addresses, but only, again, at this very abstract level, saying we need more buses. We need a bus rapid transit system. Fine. But it doesn't say where would it go. Who's going to pay for it? How would it actually, you know, to answer the question that you guys got a fax about?
Yeah.
Where are students going to park?
I didn't read the duh part. Yeah. Where will the students park their cars to get onto the buses? Duh. And that's from Erica.
Yeah. And the issue, as I said, is that you have to have the buses start somewhere near people's homes so they don't have to walk more than a block or two to get on the bus.
You know, I think that's all fine and good. I think that there's
doesn't Mike sound reasonable?
Well, he is. That's why he's been reelected time in and time out, probably for, you know, good reason. But the fact of the matter is that, first, there's no silver bullet for this. There's no single silver bullet to solve this problem. There's got to be a whole series of things, I think, done. And it would start with this. It would start with the city council and UCSC saying, we have a critical crisis on the west side, and we are going to commit major priority effort on both of our sides to see this situation change. And then they would tackle it. And I think that the kind of rapid bus thing would be a contribution. I think there's no reason the UCSC has a shuttle system up on campus. Effectively, the campus invades the neighborhoods and the town. That shuttle system could be extended down into the community. Those are small transport vehicles that go around the campus. There's no reason they couldn't come out, so it wouldn't have to totally fall on the transportation system, the existing transportation system of the city. I think this idea, going back to the Eastern Access, I would like to put forward this thought. Do we really believe that at some point in the future there won't be additional accesses to the university? Do we think that in 30 years there won't be another access route to the university? And if we think there likely will be, then why don't we tackle that now? And I really take exception to the reaction and the sort of twist that's been put on this Eastern Access question. What the alternative access petition said is simply that we want a study done of an alternative access. It didn't say it was going to be a boulevard. It didn't say it was going to be a road. It said there are lots of different ways this could be addressed, and it asked that it be addressed. And I think that's a legitimate issue. And the fact that Eastern Access, in the terms of a four-lane highway or something, was previously looked at and rejected, that's neither here nor there. We're not asking for that. We don't want a boulevard or snowmobiles, which is what one letter said, going up through the middle of Poganip. We're not asking for that. So I think that this knee-jerk reaction concerning this proposal to seriously look at the issue of alternative accesses is a very real and legitimate request. Okay. Let me just say one other thing about this, Michael. I have not looked at it, but I can tell you I plan to, and that is, what is the disaster preparedness of the university? What would happen if there was a major catastrophe and you needed to get a wildfire or such, and you needed to get people safely off that hill? In the existing circumstance, it'd be total chaos.
Uh-huh.
Those are the kinds of serious issues I think that need to be addressed as well.
Okay. All righty, let's go to the phone lines. Our first caller will be Dan in Santa Cruz. Dan, welcome to the KSCO Saturday Special on AM 1080.
Well, thanks for having me. It's nice to hear a forum, an intelligent one, that opens this whole issue up for discussion.
Good.
I just wanted to kind of echo, I guess, one of the points that was just made, and that's that I'll try and keep this short, but it seems as if the neighborhood's problem needs to be addressed, and we can disagree on what the possible solution might be, but out of hand, just toss an Eastern Access route or alternative access route off the table because one study of one design done 20 or 30 years ago had a series of obstacles that made it unappealing. It just seems kind of disingenuous, because I think the issue here is most of the people coming to the university are not coming from the city, they're coming from the county. And public transit, bikes, et cetera, is just not going to work for a big section of the commuters. And so what's needed is some kind of park and ride lot, some kind of shuttle, and an alternative access could occur not between Highway 9 and the university, but between Highway 1 by the railroad tracks there in the university. and it would only touch
one-tenth.
I take
a little bit of eminent domain, but sure.
Yeah, well, so would a lot of other proposals.
Sure.
But you could also have some type of overpass. You could also virtually avoid all but one-tenth of 1% of Poganip and just skirt the very southern boundary. And there are alternatives to this, and it needn't be an on-ramp. It could be a bus shuttle ramp. It could be a bike route. It could be a gondola or a tunnel. Basically, you know, we got a big problem, and it just seems like everything should be on the table in terms of finding ways to alleviate the traffic crunch in the west side, because that's you know, a lot of people love, I love this town, and I would hate to see the quality of life disappear because of the noise and the traffic, and it's just, I'm glad to see that there's it seems like a renewed commitment to look at the problem, agendize it, and really work through what all the solutions might be.
Good. Okay, Dan, thanks for calling the Saturday special on AM 1080. Here comes Nicole, who lives on High Street. You're on the air on KSCO, Nicole.
Hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I am just so excited that these guys are discussing this, but, you know, I have some feelings on this. People in this town are afraid to even mention the word Eastern Access. I was happy when Mike brought it up, Mike, the owner of the station or whoever he is.
yeah.
But anyway, you know, they make that so precious. When right now the degradation of this neighborhood, of these old Victorian homes that are so beautiful and so historical and so much a part of the history of Santa Cruz and the beauty of Santa Cruz, they give no value to what's happening to them. And all you have to do is drive through these neighborhoods and look at some of these gorgeous homes. They need paint. They have college students living in
them. And you have plenty of time to look at them because you're stuck in gridlock, huh?
Absolutely. Try having 14,000 cars drive by your house every day and see how it feels. It's like you're living in the middle of the freeway. I think that, you know, there aren't that many options. You know, they keep saying all these different options. We can spend years looking at all these options, and guess what? Nothing will happen except more cars will keep going up and down High Street. I think that, as John said, something about eventually they're going to have to look at Poganip. They just are. If you look at the college and you look at the size of the town and the ways up that hill, there's really only two ways. The way the former person that called in, Dan, said, coming from one. And why not have two? Why not have one coming from one and one coming from the up at the end of Encinal, going up through Poganip, taking a very small portion of it and making it so attractive that it would look beautiful going up through there. It would not take, it would not destroy.
Yeah, so it could become something like Day Drive, which to this day is attractive, and it's never congested. They did a wonderful job, so why can't the same kind of job be done with the Eastern Access?
Nobody says that a road through Golden Gate Park in San Francisco is somehow a terrible thing. Now, it is true that they do close parts of those roads on Sundays in Golden Gate Park, but the fact of the matter is you can design passageways of one sort or another that are attractive. And again, it doesn't have to go through, and it shouldn't go through the center of it.
And it wouldn't. There's no way to even go through the center of it.
Nobody would want that.
If anybody, all they have to do is go down to Encinal, go down to the end of the street, and look up the hill. You can almost visualize, you know, a path up there or a road up there.
And then you could get better access to Costco, too.
Well, you get better access to the freeways. And it's kind of you know, Costco, UPS, all those places are over there, so it has that look anyway.
Yes.
Instead of continuing to destroy this neighborhood, which isn't just this neighborhood, after a while it becomes all of Santa Cruz.
Nicole, so far you're the most intelligent caller. Nothing against Dan, nothing against Dan at all. But
well, you know, Santa Cruz, I'll be finished momentarily here, but I just want to really give you my ideas. It's the people in this town. I know they're environmentalists, and they take their time, and they take lots of it to make decisions. But if you look at the past and what is happening, and what efforts have had to be expended to get the city to even look at this, I mean, had to go out and gather signatures. And by the way, Mike was wrong on the signature count. It was way over 1,000 that the West Side gathered, and it was way under 2,500 that the other people gathered. And so I just want to make that clear. But, you know, and it's not, it's just to say that, you know, this area, they're going to be fighting this back and forth and back and forth, when why don't they just spend the time and the money and look at look at two entrances, one from one and one from Encinal, and make it a beautiful design that goes through, you know, up through Poganip in a very nice way, just like Golden Gate Park. There's a lot of these other cities that have done this. I work in Palo Alto, and there's Stanford University up there, and a lot of the people would come off of 280 down Page Mill Road, and they would go off on all these little side streets through the neighborhood to get to the university quicker. The students were doing it. And what the city did is they went along and they blocked every single one of those side streets or those tributaries. With you couldn't go
sort of like what's been done on Mission Street between Mission and King, huh?
Exactly. And when that was done, it was interesting how people did adapt to it and people started, you know, taking the route that they were supposed to take and actually start coming in from other directions.
Yes.
People will adapt, but you give these students this way. They're always running late. They're not going to take all these alternative transportations. They're, you know, they're so late. Everybody's late all the time and rushing and busy. They're going to take their car, and they're going to take the side streets. So let's just give them a good side street to take.
Okay.
And give them a nice one.
Thank you,
Spend
Nicole.
Spend the money there. Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate your call to the Saturday special. Now let's see if our next caller, Nick in Royal Oak, will be as or more intelligent a caller than Nicole. Go ahead, Nick. You're on
the
air.
I assume we're talking about the intelligence of their comments, not whether they themselves are or are not intelligent.
thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, we want, in fact, I think we're going to start a new trend here on the Saturday special today of giving a prize for the most intelligent, for the host determined most intelligent call of the 2-hour program.
3-hour on the air?
No, probably something good for your health, probably. That's what I'm thinking of. We'll think about that during the break. Go ahead, Nick, you're on.
I'm just a periodic visitor to the university.
Okay.
Now and then. So I see it more like chapter than the one page at a time. And so I see the impact differently. Last time, it's from grade to evaluation. Is when I went up there last time, I see it industrial, very busy to grade, where you have to drive in at your meridian very smartly to keep the evaluation going, or else you just go in courtesy without any regard to anything, and it just goes to a grade, and people get hectic, and that's not what we want. And I saw a petition I wanted to bring up of the grand jury evaluation of going through Poganip. And my knowledge of it is that they went ahead, they saw that route and they went ahead and impacted the university to force the issue. And what my basic concern, what I'm looking at right now is a roadkill factor. It's you know, dead animals on the side of the road to just the grade is very not the beautiful route. I would like to see is something like maybe a one, if it does happen, I would go with a one-way route, but I would close it off during sensitive times. I would only let it one way up to the universe in the morning, one way down.
That would require an eastern access. There's no other place. Thank you for your call to the Saturday special. That was Nick in Royal Oak. Now let's go to Jim in Santa Cruz. Jim, welcome to the KSCO Saturday special on AM 1080.
Thank you very much. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I figured all this out for you.
Thank you.
I thought about this. This has been obviously rather controversial for some time, and I'm well aware of the Poganip area, and I've been up there numerous times. I think it's a very special area. My solution, and it may be noteworthy here, would be to go underground. You know, with the advent of maglev technology, you could go underground with a train right out of downtown. You could kill two birds with one stone. You can get university people and students up to the university, and you could increase the shoppers downtown by having a metro center with more population. And you could go underground with a train along the river, go ahead and utilize part of the Poganip section going up to the university with some kind of railway with the maglev system going up there.
That would be underground.
Underground along the river coming out of the
As Mel Brooks would say, in Blazing Saddles. Mm-hmm. What'll it cost, man? What'll it cost?
I think the cost and feasibility would be quite sensible comparatively to all this other stuff, and you know, offsetting. You know,
all due respect, Sam.
Eminent domain and all the other stuff that might go along with, you know, in legal battles with other people's homes and stuff, and new routes. And I think the Poconip area is too special to be running, be pouring concrete and you know, destroying the environment.
My God, I know what it costs to put ugly utility lines in front of your house underground.
Mm-hmm.
And no one is willing to spend that. I mean, you're talking about like a transbay tube or something. And I think it's a great idea, but again...
Well, it's part European, it's part Japanese, it's part America. I think you take the best of from everybody's idea, and yeah, it is expensive.
Well, I would be willing to pay more for my taxes.
Yeah.
I think if we could do such a thing, but well, how much more would I have to pay? I think my taxes would be more than my cost of living. Period. for everything to do such a thing.
Well, I think the city would see a tremendous boost in shoppers and
you know, the first, let me just say quickly, the first technical problem you're going to run up against is that the hill is literally too steep for a rail solution. You'd have to come up with a cog railroad. We've already studied this issue in the past. And so people don't realize the grade you're going
like
up there.
Like the one that goes up Pikes Peak.
And you simply cannot run a railroad up it unless it's a cog railroad. And then the question is, how do people get to that cog railroad? Because you have to change modes. In other words, you start off on a bus or a train or something else, then you're going to have to change somewhere to this cog railroad, whether it runs above ground or underground. You know, whereas a road, at least technically, you could run a car up that hill. You could not ride on a rail up it.
Yeah, or what do you call those things at Heavenly Valley, a tramway?
I think there's solutions available for the grade there. You know, this is 2004. This is not 1960. You know,
it's going to cost 100 times more.
Well, that's my answer for you. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, well, thank you for thinking that out for us.
You know, let me respond, Michael, if I could, to this issue before we go to other folks and give John a chance to respond as well. The reason I'm not in favor of discussing the Eastern, having the public discussion, you know, I'm fine on radio or something, but engaging the city council and the public in an investigation or a serious study of a road alternative. I don't think there's going to be a road through there in the next 30 years. If I thought that, then why not now? I think it's a reasonable question. But I consider myself above all my various ideological concerns, a pragmatist. And I just think we'll be spinning wheels and wasting a huge amount of time. There are people who, and a large number of them, who really have what I'll call, using the word in quotes here, a religious attitude towards the Poconip that means when you start a discussion about the possibility of putting a road through there, you're just going to build huge opposition immediately. Now, I actually counted the petitions we got. There were 877 of them. I was told that there were 2,500 of the petitions on the other side. I've never seen, they haven't been submitted yet, so that may not be true, but that's what I was told. But it doesn't matter if there's only 1,000 or there's 1,200 or 800 or whatever that people said we got a serious problem. If it was six petitions, you know, six signatures, you can see with your own eyes there's a serious problem. You don't need to have people beat you over the head to tell you something's gone wrong there. And on the other side of it, whether they have exactly...
They might need to beat you over the head to get you to do something about it.
Well, we'll find out. I mean, but the point is, I'm not, you know, I certainly don't object to people putting whatever pressure they can organize to sort of demand that people respond to problems. I think that's the way government works. But what I'm saying is, if you spend your time talking about an Eastern Access Road, put that into the mix of things, that will completely dominate and control the entire discussion. You will spend a long time at it, and when you're done, you will have accomplished nothing. I really don't think you're going to succeed at persuading the people in this town to build any kind of a road through the Poconip. And as you point out, you're not going to be able to afford to stick it underground. That would be fine. Everybody would think that was wonderful, but you couldn't afford it. And again, what it is you put underground would be a tunnel with cars, if you like, but it wouldn't solve the problem above ground. And we'll talk about it. We'll spend years debating it, and eventually there'll be some kind of a citizen vote on the issue in which the idea of a road is going to get killed. So my view is, let's get started seriously and not sort of debate this for the next decade. let's get serious about talking about actually building some kind of an alternative transportation thing that will get students out of their cars. Now, one of your callers said you can't get students out of their cars because they're late for class, et cetera. Half the students at UC take public transit, half of them. And there's nothing that would stop another quarter of them at least, you know, which would make a huge difference on High Street to get out of their cars, as well as staff and faculty, if you gave people a better alternative.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mike. You would know this. Aren't there as many staff and faculty at UCSC as there are students?
No, there's about 15,000 undergraduate students, about 1,000 graduate students. There's only 3,000 or something total staff and faculty, something in that range, 3,200, 3,500. I don't know the exact number, but it's not nowhere near as many as there are students.
You know, I think this term road is... can be interpreted by people who want to protect the Poganip and think it's the Yosemite of Santa Cruz County. They interpret it as a four-lane highway. For people who interpret it as an access route, some of them, I think, view it as a single lane where a shuttle service could run.
Sort of like.
So let's not...
John, let me tell you that we spent 10 years in a battle over whether we could put a bicycle lane across Arana Gulch. 10 years since we came up with the idea. And up until the current council, we couldn't even get a council that would vote. You know, I was on the council of the law. I was on the minority. People told us, they called this bicycle. We're talking about a bike lane with some, you know, small, you know, the whole thing would be 9 feet wide for bicycles, 10 feet wide. And people started calling it the bicycle freeway. They started, I mean, you know, really, people go nuts over this thing. And this is for a bicycle lane that I support. And I'm just telling you, we may or may not ever get, and the Coastal Commission has been fighting this on this. We may, at least the staff locally, we may or may not ever get that bicycle path across Arana Gulch. We're not going to succeed in getting a road to the Poganip. I just think it's, you know, everything
else
being equal.
Gentlemen, let's go back to the phone line. By the way, we haven't had a single caller on 477-1340. Don't forget that we have that whole bank of phones. 479-1080 is always jammed, as it is right now. Let's go to it, line two. That's Aldo in Santa Cruz. You're on the air on KFCO. Hi, Aldo.
Hi, thank you for taking this call.
You're welcome.
I would like to go back to basics for a moment and restate of what I think everybody agrees on, and that is that UCSC is the largest single traffic generator in the city, in Santa Cruz.
Yes, that's true.
And it seems to me preposterous that the city and the university would undertake a master transportation study and assign to that problem, to the single's highest traffic generator, a rating of zero. Namely, they've disregarded it completely. When the city and the university entered into this agreement to do this study and to spend $500,000 on it, they expressly stated that the jointly funded study will not include a discussion or consideration of an eastern axis as part of any solution to the traffic issues in the city. And it seems to me preposterous to shove the problem under the rug for another 30 years. Now, I don't know what the solution is. There are many. Some have already been mentioned now. It's some kind of a road. It's some kind of an aerial tramway. Other alternatives that don't entail taking any piece of Poganip at all. But if they aren't studied, how can you possibly come to any reasonable conclusion? It seems to me that since you are rating the intelligence of the questions that come your way,
yes, I am.
Why don't you also rate the intelligence of spending $500,000 on a traffic study that does not take into account the single largest problem in the city?
Believe me, Aldo, I was going to get to that, even if you hadn't called.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Appreciate your call. That was Aldo in Santa Cruz. We can go to Lee real quick. We'll probably have to hold Lee over because there's 30 seconds from now to the news. Go ahead, Lee. You're on the air.
Hi there. I would like to know why there is not more of an enforcement presence. It's not just the students. It's the staff. I see their little stickers hanging from their windshield things. It's construction workers. It's soccer moms. And it's retirees. They are blazing up our streets. Why can't we get some support from the police to enforce our stop signs and our speed limits.
Maybe we don't have to hold you over. Do we need to?
Well, answer the
question. Okay, no time. We got to answer. We got to go to the news. It's KSCO Santa Cruz. It's 11 a.m. Back in 6 minutes after USA News.
USA Radio Network News. I'm Kurt Lewis.
Baby, it's cold outside.
Tweety knows what he's talking about in much of the U.S. today. Winter's icy grip has clasped around the Northeast, the Midwest, even as far south as Texas this morning. First of all, a major winter storm body slammed the eastern seaboard from North Carolina northward to Maine, making driving nearly impossible, especially in more hilly neighborhoods of southern Pennsylvania.
I just decided to stop here because they couldn't stop down the ramp. She just crashed on the wall. You better stop, right?
In states like Rhode Island, where winter storms are no stranger, the road crews don't wait for the snow to mount up to plowing depth.
We start with the snowflakes. Your best bet is to actually get some material down, especially when the roads are as cold as they are, salt to keep the snow from adhering to the pavement. If it bonds to the pavement, you have a problem getting it off, and it gets very slippery. You have to kind of keep it wet.
Department of Transportation engineer John Nicholson agreeing with colleagues in other states who've been saying it's fortunate part of the storm, at least, is on the weekend, so there won't be as many drivers trying to get to work today and home again. In addition to the Mid-Atlantic and New England regions, there are winter weather alerts of various sorts in Rocky Mountain states like Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Utah, and Colorado, in addition to the eastern California spine of the Sierra Nevada Mountains. Mercury's dipped into the 30s as far south as the Dallas area this morning, but temperatures will be more moderate over the next few days. This is USA Radio News.
With a KSCO commentary, here is Kay Zwirling.
As a pedestrian observer of the human condition and of the attitudes of society toward the two most widely used recreational substances, alcohol and marijuana, otherwise known as pot, one wonders why alcohol is universally accepted, condoned, and promoted, while marijuana or pot is maligned and in some places forbidden. The U.S. government has declared pot to be illegal, so many caught with its possession or use are fined, stigmatized, languishing in prison, and otherwise made miserable. There is documented medical proof that pot can ease the pain of terminally ill patients and afford their last days a measure of mellow peace. Despite this positive use of the substance, the federal government continues to declare it illegal, even though some states do allow its use for medical purposes. Alcohol, on the other hand, gets a free ride, despite the fact that its legal use has caused and continues to cause enormous human misery, with the breakup of families, neglect of children, loss of jobs, accidents and killings by drunken drivers, and the overall drain on society. One could argue that while both substances are considered bad, alcohol causes more grief in the world than pot does. During a trip to Jamaica many years ago, our tour guide pointed out the abundant marijuana bushes growing wild alongside the roads, and he attributed the longevity and good health of most Jamaicans to their daily drinking of a tea made from the marijuana leaves. So, one could wonder, if alcohol, with nothing good to justify its use, is federally legal, shouldn't pot, with some significant proven good, likewise be legal? Or put another way, if pot is illegal, surely shouldn't alcohol also be illegal? For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Zwirling.
We now bring you back to USA Radio Network News, already in progress.
Take Ester C. ESTER-C.
Look for Ester C at GNC, Walgreens, and everywhere vitamins are sold.
U.S. stocks headed south Friday, getting out of the gates slowly and never recovering after the Labor Department released November's report on unemployment.
The U.S. economy created far fewer jobs than expected in November, casting doubt on the strength of the economic recovery. Those soft numbers put wings on gold prices. The precious commodity soared above $400 an ounce, moving closer to eight-year highs. The dollar, however, tripped over the figures, hitting a new record low against the euro for the sixth day in a row. I'm Conway Gittins at the New York York Stock Exchange.
On the upside, the overall unemployment rate fell from 6.0 to 5.9% in November, and there was a faster-than-expected 2.2% increase in factory orders. That suggests the manufacturing sector turnaround is still on track. Dow component Caterpillar rallied 2.1% after Smith Barney upgraded Cat to buy from hold and upped the price target from $77 to $90. This is Kurt Lewis with news on the USA Radio Network.
Why talk when you can argue?
News Talk 1080 KSCO.
Good morning. You are tuned to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It is 5 minutes past 11 o'clock on this Saturday, December 6, 2003, and I'm Noah James with your Central Coast weather forecast. Today, periods of rain with highs in the mid-50s to mid-60s, southerly winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. This evening, rain is likely with lows in the 40s to lower 50s and southwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast for today. Southeasterly winds 5 to 15 knots with wind waves 2 feet and a westerly swell 6 to 15 feet at 14 seconds. And there also is a high surf advisory for today and tonight. It is currently 56 degrees outside of the station in Santa Cruz. We now return to hour number 2 of the Saturday special. Stay tuned.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Oh, my God. Guest and host, do you agree that future of commuting will largely be dominated by intelligent highways? That's a fax from Bob.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
Bob is from Santa Cruz, and he is asking the questions. His question is being asked of our guest in the studio today, John Aird, a 20-year resident of Santa Cruz, last 14 years of which have been on High Street, which is a very congested roadway in the morning and the afternoon hours. And we also have in the studio Mike Rotkin, who is the current vice mayor of Santa Cruz, former mayor of Santa Cruz, many times city council member of Santa Cruz, and current city council member of Santa Cruz. And my name is MZ, and the topic today is traffic in Santa Cruz and how it can be alleviated. Well, what do you think about Bob and Santa Cruz faxers, his question? Do you agree that the future of commuting will largely be dominated by intelligent highways? That's a great question. Who wants to answer that?
What's the definition of intelligent highways?
I assume he's talking about these sort of technologies that take some control out of the hands of the driver of the cars and provide sort of various electronic solutions that sort of, there's a whole range of different kinds of alternatives. And I don't see that any one of them would fix this problem. No,
it doesn't. There's too much volume for
exactly.
the capacity.
It doesn't really address the issue. Yeah. Whether those things are going to happen, more probably they will, but that's more an issue probably for Highway 1 or 17 or something, less of an issue here on the west side of Santa Cruz. I think a big part of the issue is whether there can actually be an alternative mode of transportation up to the hill that actually takes significant numbers of people out of cars. I mean, the problem with bicycles, for example, which I support, I ride my bike to work twice a week, you can't really get everybody to the campus based on riding their bike to work. I mean, there's going to be a certain number of people. You can find ways to encourage that more, better bicycle parking on campus, better bike routes up there and so forth. But
there are more that's, than
not going
one.
To, that's not going to address the issue at the level we need. What you need is some kind of an alternative. That's why I came up with this thing, not alone came up with it, but support this idea of really investigating seriously what kind of a bus rapid transit solution there might be, because that could take thousands of people out of cars if you do the right kind of design. It's not for free. You have to start planning now. It's going to cost millions of dollars to develop the entire system. The campus itself, one of the problems we have right now is that the campuses in UC get no money from the state for housing or transportation solutions. They're expected to take that out of their existing campus money. And if the state of California wants to put more students, or even the number they're putting now, into these local communities, small towns like Santa Cruz, and it's not just our problem, the same problem's going on in Davis and Santa Barbara and everywhere else, they're going to need to come up with some money to basically provide infrastructure adequate for the growth of these campuses, and to do it in a way that doesn't have people in their cars, because there's not room for another car on Bay and High Street. I mean, we're at the end of it. Right now, their cars back up every afternoon on High Street. They come around the corner at Story Street, backed up almost to Laurent, almost every afternoon. And it's, you can measure it every year. It gets back, it backs up another, I don't know how many hundred feet or
Mike,
something.
Mike, are you still affiliated with the university as you were for many years?
Yeah, I'm a lecturer up there. I'm
still a lecturer.
I'm not in
community studies, is it? Or?
Yes, in community studies. Just so we're clear, I'm not in any decision-making position at the university. I'm a peon up there.
But one would think that because you have some association with the university and that you presumably derive a paycheck from the university, that that there would, you would be in a position to effect some sort of better relationship with the university and the city, of which you are very powerful, actually, and have a lot to say, than has been the case.
Well, you know, I will say this on behalf of the university. No chancellor has ever actually threatened my job over my views about university growth and those questions, because I've been an opponent. I was a proponent of a measure that passed that killed an R&D park up there that would have brought massive amounts of traffic down the streets of Santa Cruz. That made a former chancellor unhappy who kept my reappointment. I used to get three-year appointments every 3 years.
Was that Angus Taylor?
No, this was actually Robert Sinsheimer. And
oh.
He kept he was leaving office as the chancellor, and I was recommended for reappointment in April, and it stayed on his desk through his tenure in July, and then a new chancellor came in and had other fish to fry, and I started teaching in October without a contract. But with that one exception, I've never had a chancellor ever come to me and tell me, like, you know, you're in trouble because you're not doing what we want you to do.
Sure.
And so I'll give them credit for that, because I'm in a position where I'm sure they could put pressure on me of one kind. It just hasn't happened. But I'm not – I've been appointed, for example, to committees. The current chancellor appointed me to a transportation and Pister before her appointed me to a transportation committee on campus, and we recommended banning cars from the center of campus, coming up with really creative alternatives in terms of someone of your callers has suggested, or maybe it was John, having the shuttle system move further into the community. We had all kinds of ideas about what should be done. They completely ignored every one of our recommendations, and we're an advisory committee. In the end, we had no impact. We opposed a particular parking garage they were building. Every time you build a new parking space on campus, that's another car driving through a neighborhood somewhere. We said you shouldn't build this parking
garage.
Maybe
there's something we can do.
You should put the $10 million for that garage into alternative transportation and more express bus routes. They ignored us. So just to be clear about one thing, my status as a lecturer on campus gives me absolutely no ability to force them to do anything.
To force them, but to at least affect the dialogue. I suppose we could do that by calling MC Greenwood ourselves and maybe asking her to be on this program with us.
The city has, you know, the city has conversations.
It'd be a good idea.
City has conversations with the university.
Why didn't we think of it before today? Oh well.
You know, Mike, you mentioned that the with this issue of funding, and I think that, you know, funds are always short. Any place you go, any city, any university, there's never enough to do everything we'd like to do. The fact that, particularly in these times, that we would be
squandering $500,000?
Well, not only that, but I'm just simply saying I think the university has got to be brought to the to a recognition, and I think the city should go on notice to the university that there should be a prohibition, an embargo, on any further development at all until there is serious, radical, workable solutions.
There can be no teeth in that.
That is the current situation.
There's still no teeth in it, right?
There are teeth in it.
Or else what?
No, I'll tell you. The city sued the university over the EIR, the Environmental Impact Report for College 8, and we got a court settlement that said the university would not grow beyond 15,000 undergraduate students, and that's their current limit. Now, how the university is going to break through that or try to break through that, I don't know. But that they basically have to undo a court-ordered settlement of a suit to make that happen. And there's no end to that. It's not like they could decide next year, well, we've changed our mind. Now, they're doing a new long-range development plan up there in which there's discussion about further growth of students, but they have not yet addressed the fact that they have a legal impediment to going further. The city has stood up to them and told them, and exactly what you just said is exactly what we've done. We've told them, no more growth at UC until you find some way to address this traffic problem.
And if the university thumbs their nose at you, then what?
We'll go back to the court and order to tell the judge they're violating the court order, and we'll have them in federal court, and we'll look for damages. Maybe enough to build a road, you know?
I applaud that. I applaud the fact that you appear, Mike, to be very serious about that. I just think that as a matter of leadership, the city needs to put this at the top of its list, has obviously not put it at the top of the list, and I think it should be at this point. And so when they're dealing with the results of an MTS study that virtually ignores this problem, I would hope to see the city council say loud and clear, we see this as a gap. We intend to address it in the following 2-3 ways. We want to, you know, we're going to pursue this as a top priority. We're going to engage the university, and we're going to stick strong on our current court order settlement in terms of pursuing this or not allowing it to be bridged relative to any future growth. I mean, that's the kind of thing that then will publicly demonstrate to the West Side neighborhood and, frankly, broader to the community that this city leadership stands for quality of residential neighborhoods. I mean, one of the things that I saw was one of these petitions was signed. A person said, I'm going to sign it, but, you know, I'm not going to be around. They lived on High Street. And we contacted the person. They said, because they're leaving. Exactly because of this reason, and they thought there would be nothing done by the current city leadership and the city staff. That's tragic.
Do you remember Erica, the faxer from last hour, who said, "Duh, where will the students park their cars to get onto the buses?"
Right.
Erica must be a serial faxer of sorts, because she sent another one that says buses are noisy, expensive, stinky, and students of UCSC live throughout the county. What percentage live on the west side? Justify the $500K. And who got paid that money? And that's, again, from Erica.
Just a quick response. First of all, let me say this, because we've been talking about it for a while. Our only traffic problems are not on the west side. That's not to diminish the importance of what's happening on the west side, but we have serious traffic problems on the east side as well. People's neighborhoods are being destroyed by people who don't, you know, not able to go down the freeway, get onto Soquel Avenue, to look for shortcuts through the neighborhoods over there. So there are problems on the other side of town as well. And growing problems on the other side as well. Her issue about buses, number one, the transit district is committed to doing CNG, compressed natural gas buses, so we're going to do it.
They're not stinky, right?
Yeah, I think that's the problem. They don't smell the way the current, basically it's lighter than air, so it evaporates into the higher. You won't smell the new buses when they come in. And getting those in place depends on getting the metro base, a new metro base built that has fueling facilities, because there's no place to fuel CNG buses right now. Buses may seem like they're noisy, whatever, but if you can take 40 people out of their cars there, which is what you do with a bus, it makes a huge difference to the traffic impacts that are going on. And in fact, the impacts are less than all those cars, and there's no way to move people without some impacts. Clearly, there are going to be impacts, but the idea that buses are worse than cars, which is, I think, implied in the facts, is really a mistake in terms of where we have to go from here. I think we have to come up with alternative transportation. The problem with rail, which would be light rail or something, which would be not as noisy, not as whatever the other impacts might be, is that it's not clear exactly where you will run that rail system. It's possible to think about doing it up Bay Street. That's the kind of alternative we should be looking at, along with other kinds of issues. There's room on Bay Street to run that light rail system up there, and there's a grade that you could actually make with a track, which you couldn't do up through the Poconip. So that's one of the options we should be looking at seriously here. Who got paid the $500K? Most of the $500K went to a consultant. I've forgotten their name now, but a traffic study consultant that did the work on that actual study.
Okay. We have another fax here. Solution, get rid of UCSC, the traffic problems go away, and politically we gain our town back. And that's signed Bucky, who sent this fax. Now look, Bucky, I mean, get real. Are you serious? I mean, How do you get rid of UCSC?
Well, Bucky doesn't know what Santa Cruz looked like in 1960 before the university came. Our downtown was a ghost town. There were boarded up stores. We used to be a town that depended on timber and limestone. That played out in 1890 to 1910. And we've never really had any business since then. We were a retirement community for the next whole part of this last century. And until the university came, we really had no economic development stuff going on in the town. And so you get rid of the university, you're going to lose some other stuff along with the traffic. And so that's not really even a good solution, even if you could do it, which, of course, is never going to happen. You know, it wouldn't necessarily be a great thing to do for the town. I think the question is how you have a university without people driving cars to it. That's the question that I think we need to look at. And, of course, we need a university that doesn't have everybody looking for houses in a town, where they provide more housing for students on the campus. And
absolutely.
That's the other issue that's in addition to traffic. Housing and traffic are the two major negative impacts that really do have to be addressed, not only if the university grows, but even if they stay the current size. Those are issues that have not been adequately addressed by the university.
My goodness, we have full board of phone calls here, which we will get back to. You're listening to the KSCO Saturday Special, a discussion of traffic involving the University of California, Santa Cruz, and the neighborhoods in Santa Cruz. The traffic has been atrocious. It's been abominable. It's been a horrible problem for many, many years. What can be done to fix it? People have been asking that for years, but nothing has been done. Here's a fax. The Cal Foundation gave UC a couple of thousand acres of free land, and that's the Poganip. It was purchased, actually, I think, for $15 million or something.
They didn't
like
give that to the university. There's confusion here. They gave the campus 2,000 acres that they built the campus on. That came from the Cal Foundation.
Okay.
In addition, they had this land that's now known as the Poganip, which was a separate piece of property also owned by the Cal Foundation. That was sold to the city. It was paid for by state park bonds, and that's how the city got a hold of Poganip as part of its greenbelt.
Okay.
Those are separate pieces of property.
Got it. Okay, so the couple thousand acres of free land, that was for the university itself
and
back in the early 60s or late
50s.
That's
what the university is now built on,
okay.
And there's lots of it that's still undeveloped.
Right, okay, so this fax is right on when it says, why doesn't the university build more student housing on campus instead of sucking up all the rentals in Santa Cruz? Wouldn't that alleviate much of the traffic problem right there? UCSC has already taken away our one big hotel, the Holiday Inn, and has taken it off the tax rolls. A foolish, short-sighted decision by our city council. And my goodness, this fax is signed by none other than KZ herself here. So,
and the answer is, yes.
The answer is yes to...
The question was, couldn't the campus build more housing on campus? Couldn't the university
right.
build more housing on campus? And wouldn't that cut down on traffic
okay,
demand? And the answer is yes.
Yes. But what can be done to sort of twist the arm of the university?
One
to
of the problems,
move in that direction.
Again, I know people hate it when I started with a simple answer, yes. And then you get into the complexities of it. As I said earlier, the campus doesn't get money from the state for building housing. Housing has to pay for itself internally. And one of the problems is when
it probably would.
It doesn't. That's the problem. Right now.
Well, but hold on.
The land is free.
Excuse me. If you've got a developer that has just proposed this SRO for 50 units of 325 square feet, essentially, which would be
on land that you have to pay for.
On land that you'd have to pay for, and is going to have an on-site manager, which somebody referred to at the Planning Commission hearing as, you know, let's get real as to what you've gone there. Basically, you've got a dorm monitor. If that kind of project is feasible with, as Michael said, with land that you have to pay for, you could get developers, I think, coming out of the woodwork to develop housing on campus with land that's free and do it and be able to do it on a profitable basis. So I think the caller or the person that sent in that fax is precisely right.
It's my mother.
Oh, your mother. Well, that's why it's right.
Yeah.
I think Kay came up with
the obvious solution once again.
I think that
that's why I said yes when she called.
I think the university...
Never say no to the host mob. Right. That would be a big mistake.
I think that the university should have a policy that it will take care of its own students on its own preserve there. And that would go a long way. I think the city also ought to explore what it could do to restrict student housing you know, off-site, and over time make those more and more restrictive. So that housing doesn't come into the community.
If there are people in the audience who are frustrated because they can't get into our program here by either calling 479-1080 or 477-1340, guess what? I'm looking at my email inbox, and if you send an email to mz@ksco.com, I won't even have to wait for the facts to be physically brought into me in the studio here where we've got Mike Rotkin and John Ayer right here, John Ayer, talking about traffic here at the University of California and the city of Santa Cruz. But let's go back to the telephone nonetheless. Line one, we'll put Clay on the air. Hello, Clay.
Hey, you guys have been hitting the nail on the head all along with your comments about putting the students and the faculty up on the university. Like the guy with the electric...
Well, that only happened in the last 3 or 4 minutes
with
my mother's facts.
Yeah, that was great.
The show didn't make sense until then.
Yeah. Now, the guy that had the electromagnetic train deal, the only thing that was good about that was put it underground, put all their housing underground, and then, like was just mentioned here recently... about developers going up there, they don't have to pay the permits, the inspections, all the stuff that typically you have to pay for when you do development with free land. I mean, if it's profitable for people to do it, paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for a small parcel of property, why couldn't it be extremely feasible by having free land and not all the permits and application fees and all that kind of stuff?
I agree.
You know, it's crazy.
Now,
that
who
they don't
can argue with Clay? Yeah. Not even you, Mike Rock. Yeah.
Well, no, you'd have to bring somebody from the university. I'm sure they'd have a response. I'm not the one. I'm not going to defend them on this one.
Okay.
And stick them underground. And
what about underground? Because would you want to live underground? But they don't have to. There's 2,000 acres up there.
You know, the interesting thing about this, I have to mention to both of you. I have to mention this because it's kind of amusing. You know who's living underground in a sense? The people that live on High Street. If you look at the barriers that people have had to put up over the last 10 years with walls to protect themselves from noise, pollution, and intrusion, effectively they're starting to build themselves underground.
Right.
And I know that I'm saying that, but I mean, you drive up, and every year you see more walls being built along High Street. So that
I thought that was for erosion control, John.
No, it's not for erosion control. It is in a few places. But in lots of those places, people...
Jeremy Lezen's place, for example, right?
Well, talk about the Wilcox house on the corner on the corner of Story and... where you come up, make the turn that Mike Rotkin was talking about. I mean, they put up a wall at considerable expense because they needed protection both visually and from noise. So the point is, the university has ample land. The university needs to put a priority on this, turn a certain portion of that land over to developers that have them coming out of the woodwork to provide housing on campus.
With you more.
We're going to get
the university chancellor on the radio here. I don't think she'll refuse. I think she'll come on down.
One other thing they ought to do, excuse me, and then I'll get off, is that they should actually make it financially a burden on them if they live off campus. You know, like you have to pay for bus service and car parking. I guess they were saying $900 a year to park your car on campus.
Right.
Charge them $900 a year to live off campus.
Actually, to be clear, it's currently about $650 or something, but it's going towards $900.
Clay, I think we have solved the problem.
Okay, so
let Pat and John and Carolyn and Elizabeth and Jeff and Carmel, you know, who've been waiting, we're going to end the program. We've solved the problem. There's no reason to continue the program. Okay, no, I'm only kidding. Okay, let's go to Jeff and Carmel. Jeff, you're on the air on KSCO.
I heard Mr. Rotkin there say they had a problem with the Coastal Commission.
This was about a different thing. I was making an analogy with a bicycle path across Arana Gulch.
Well, I'm talking about Poganip.
No, the Coastal Commission is not involved in this issue.
Oh, okay. Because if they were, we have a new governor.
Yeah, there's no connection there.
But I have a couple of suggestions. You could just make it so UC Santa Cruz is just outside of the city limits, and this way, if the city felt that the UC Santa Cruz wasn't cooperating, you could just close
wasn't
all the streets.
The annexing been discussed before, and wasn't there some sort of an attempt
when,
to do
when
that?
The university was, when in the late 1950s and early 60s, this city and this county fought to bring the university here. They, as a form of economic development, the local business community fought hard for it. And they made agreements to, in order to get the university to come here. They agreed that we would provide them with water, with street access. And at that time, there was an agreement from the county to build a road through the what's now known as the Poganip, to an eastern access road. And there were some other agreements as well, the details of the sewage, you know, that we would process the sewage for them and a bunch of stuff like that. Those agreements are still, you know, in place. And the city, there's no way the city can now say, you know, we're unhappy, so we're going to take our road away or something. We've been in court over this, no ability even to control the construction traffic on the way to the university, because it's now been interpreted by the courts that that basically is something we gave away in the early 60s when we signed the agreement to have the university come here. So that might be tempting as a way of thinking about stuff, but it's just not a possibility for the city. Our question is, can we work out, you know, through pressure, negotiated arrangements, and if necessary, court stuff, pressure to get the university to house a greater percentage of its students, to provide more funding for traffic alternatives that really make a difference to getting people out of their cars. That's a fight that we still have to have at the university, but we don't have the legal ability just to say, we're unhappy and therefore we're going to take away High Street and you can't use it or something. That both High Street and Bay Street are explicitly listed in this agreement that those will be access roads to the university.
Okay.
Why don't you do some? The other thing you could do is, you know how you come in Mission Street there in Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you get rid of all those houses that are built right up close to the street and widen Mission Street?
We just widened Mission Street.
Oh, you did again?
Mission Street's less the problem here than Mission Street is basically flows reasonably freely right now. We'll see for how long, but that's not been a major bottleneck since the whole street is now four lanes wide, which it never was, and it took us 15 years to accomplish that, and that's now done.
Thank you, Jeff and Carmel. Nice to hear from you. Let's go to Lynn in Santa Cruz. You're on the air, Lynn.
Hi.
Hey there.
Great show, and I just want to make some comments on things I've heard today, and then I'll go off the air and listen. One, because I'm really trying to pay attention to what's happening in our neighborhoods, and the MTS has a lot of information based on things that will change in our neighborhoods. So this particular area is impacted as much as any other neighborhood that I can imagine.
Yes.
And one thing I wanted to kind of point out is, you know, this talk about the Eastern Access. Well, literally, High Street has become the Eastern Access.
That's true.
When you think about it.
That's true.
You know, so and it's interesting that neighborhood was a well-established neighborhood way before the university came in. And when the university was proposed and accepted, my understanding, and I don't know how this differs from other kinds of developments that we accept into our city, usually you have a development project and then you have all the ways it's going to be implemented and you get okays to do that. Well, obviously the okay on this one was there was another way to come into the university, so it didn't go through the neighborhood. So the fact that that's been negated and just lost in the shuffle and the Eastern Access is now High Street doesn't seem right to me as far as looking at what neighborhoods should be. And I'll just quickly, in the general plan that exists right now, our live document, there's a two-sentence glossary for the word neighborhood, and I'd like to read that if I could, because it tells a lot about what our city currently feels a neighborhood is.
Is it more than two sentences?
Nope.
Okay.
It's quick. The neighborhood unit should be the basic building block of the city. The distance from schools, parks, limited commercial services, and other neighborhood serving facilities should be a comfortable walking and biking distance for a school-aged child. There will be no through traffic uses. That's our definition of a neighborhood.
Well, you know, Lynn, one thing that your comment sparked in my mind is the city has a heritage tree ordinance, you know, where you're not allowed to take down a tree. I think it's more than, I don't know, 14 inches in circumference or something. And, you know, anybody who's taking down a tree in this town, you know, it's a major fight. And, by the way, I support that, but, nevertheless, there's a real high priority put on that. High Street is a heritage street. It's one of the oldest streets in the community. And there's been no protection of it.
Well, no one's suggesting that High Street be chopped down.
You know what? If you have 15,000, you think of 15,000 cars going by, trucks, buses, you know, there should be a determination that when at a certain time, that the level of high street transit and the level of other streets that are identified as being currently abused, we should set targets for those, and then we should implement policies to bring about those targets. And, you know, unless that kind of concrete, specific objectives are set with staff that is pointed to giving this a priority, it is not going to change. And you can have all these abstract MTS lofty ideas. Mike, you were saying one of your concerns about the MTS study was, and one of the reasons you didn't support it initially, was you were concerned that it would end up with basically some abstract principles that wouldn't further, in a practical way, addressing the problem. And I think that's what we've got.
Another concern that I have listening to today was, you know, there is a neighborhood area that did get together very spontaneously and made this petition request that was mentioned by Mr. Aird, literally very much coming out of the neighborhoods, and then that sparked another group that has then countered with apparently quite a few signatures too. What concerns me about that is that it's clearly, and I think it's even mentioned, it wasn't really out of the neighborhoods. It went to the student population as well as the environmental population, which I think exists. I think there's quite a few environmentalists within the neighborhoods as well, so there's no argument there, but that then again takes it out of being a real neighborhood issue and becomes a political issue and pits neighborhoods against, I don't know, it's an odd thing to me, because when Mike even referred to that group as almost a religious group, it made me kind of go, well, that's easy to deal with, because as far as I know, we have to keep a separation of church and state. So,
hey, thanks very much for your call, Lynn. That was Lynn in Santa Cruz. Here's the fact, the emails are starting to appear here. Here's one from Painter, P-A-I-N-T-R. Busing is the only real solution to all our community, all our transportation problems in the county. I can't believe that the school districts are shutting down their busing programs. They should be expanding them. The RTC should give all their money to the school districts, and all students and faculty, for that matter, should start riding. Then their parents could sell their SUVs and buy hybrids. Voila, no more traffic. Okay, now let's go to the next. Let's see if we have another. here's from Vernon. MZ, who is or are the they in the sentence, they are going to have to come up with the money, to whom Mike Rotkin refers? And that's from Vernon, trademark registered.
A quick response. What I've proposed to the university is that we go, and of course it's difficult in the current budget crisis, I've been talking about this before this crisis began, that we should get together with other university towns, not just UC, but the University of CSU system as well, and basically get together and go to the legislature and be clear that if they want to have increased students in local communities, which is have a growing student population in the state, that the state legislature is going to have to come up with funding to support the infrastructure for both housing built on campus as well as public transit or other kinds of transit solutions to deal with the problems that are being caused in local communities. So the they that I'm looking for the funding here is the state of California. Okay. I don't think it's reasonable to ask the taxpayers in the city of Santa Cruz to come up with all the money, or the county of Santa Cruz, to come up with all the money to support infrastructure needs for the UC system.
Mike, how long is that deal with the former Holiday Inn? How many more years remain in that deal so that it might become a hotel again if there were...
I'm not aware of that. My understanding is the university bought that thing and it's theirs and they're going to do what they want with it.
Oh, really?
Maybe, unless there's something I don't understand.
I always thought that it was that it's owned by a private individual that got a smart idea to lease it to the university.
That may be. I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was bought by the university, sold to the university. That was my understanding. I could be wrong.
Yeah. If anybody knows for sure the answer to that question, give us an email, mz@ksco.com.
I think, but that's a whole other debate sometime. But we need a conference hotel in this town, and it's not the Holiday Inn. It needs to be a much bigger one down by the beach, and then will bring a lot more business and impact to the community. But that's not an argument about whether, you know, the Holiday Inn should or shouldn't be
returned. Your ideas about business has changed over the years, hasn't it?
Oh, I think that's fair.
Yeah. In the early days. Yeah. You have changed. So has Kennedy. Here's another email to mz@ksco.com. A campus planner once told me that there was a debate whether to put the campus where it is or on the upper campus, the latter choice being seen as better environmentally. An entire small student city could be built on the upper campus and surrounding lands, making it easier to quickly get to class on bikes. But because the university is a paragon of bureaucratic waste, the project would need to be leased to private developers so it can be built and rented at rates that don't drive up rents in town like current campus housing does. And that is from someone named Tom Payne.
This idea of conceiving of the university as a not just a place of academic learning, but as a community in which all of its needs will, or largely all of its needs will be met. I don't think that's inconceivable. If you've got a population of 15,000, which is bigger than many small communities in the state, you could develop an infrastructure on campus that would support most of their needs. And by that I mean housing, I mean the, you know, food services. Obviously they've got parts of this. But, you know, to really, as a policy commitment on the part of the university, to say we're going to join with the business development community to really expand what we've got here to take care of 90% of what this community needs right on the hill, that would have an amazingly positive effect on the residential neighborhoods that surround the university.
I would agree. Okay, 19 minutes before 12
noon. Then, of course, people in the community would be complaining that those damn students, they live up there on the hill, but they never come and spend any money in our community, and we have whining about that, proving that you can't please all the people
I don't disagree
that there's room for more housing up there, and we need to build it, and that it would have a positive impact on housing and traffic and stuff in town. But I think let's avoid sort of, and I'm sure this is not what John implied by this, but others might misunderstand it, that we want to have some complete isolation of the campus from our community. I mean, we do get cultural benefits from having the campus here. We do get huge economic benefits from the money that's spent in town by students and staff and faculty. And so it's a matter of trying to reduce the impacts of future growth. We just don't have any more room in our town for more cars and for a lot more affordable housing for students. So at this point, I think if there's going to be a major expansion of the campus, it's going to have to happen on campus. And in the past, the fact that the university built more, a higher percentage of housing on campus than most campuses do, that was fine when you had, you know, 5,000 students or 6,000 students. When you're up to 15,000 students, we've reached the point where every new student they bring, they're going to have to find housing for them. I don't think we can expect that a 50% housing rate, which is about what we got right now, actually it's about 39% or something.
John, can you and I both find ourselves agreeing with Mike Rotkin on this issue?
I believe we could.
For every new student that comes to UCSC, UCSC must be responsible for finding housing for that person.
And finding housing, by the way, on their own, on the UCSC campus.
Okay, yeah, we got to make that a cause celeb here. We got 17 minutes remaining in this program. If you're on hold, we will get to you. We also have to do a commercial break here, so I guess Noah's all set to do that. Okay, yeah, kill the promos if you would, Noah, but if there are any in there, and we'll just have commercials. And it's okay to have the message or the email request from me here, but go ahead and do that. Should we take the call first? Are you set with the rotation? Okay. It's the KSCO Saturday special, and we'll be right back after this group of messages. Stay with us.
Windows are a way to see and a way to be seen. Hello, I'm Guy Mitchell from Lighthouse Windows in Santa Cruz. Lighthouse Windows installs doors and windows in homes and in new construction. We make a big difference in how you see and how you are seen. Listen.
My name is Alice Nikolaisen, and we're residents of Santa Cruz County. Took him one day to put the windows in. You'd never even know they were here. I love the looks of it. I like the grids in the front, and we decided just to have the plain windows in the rest of the house, but it really dressed up the front of the house. When the windows and the doors are shut, you don't get the outside noise. All the neighbors, when they'd walk by, they commented on the windows and in turn asked us who did it. We told them, and they have had some done themselves.
New windows and doors from Lighthouse Windows will keep your home warmer in the winter, cooler in the summer, and quieter all the time. So when it comes time for you to improve the way you see and the way you are seen, call on the window and door specialists at Lighthouse Windows in Santa Cruz. 426-2601. 426-2601.
We share this tiny planet with all sorts of creatures that wander its surface. Creatures big and small. Some of the smallest, like bacteria, fungi, and yeast, can seriously affect our bodies. Here's pharmacist Benjamin Fuchs to explain how.
Funguses and yeast are sugar feeders. So right away you can tell that if you're eating a lot of sugar, you're eating a lot of refined carbohydrates, you're going to be feeding that fungus. Secondly, bacteria inside our intestines live in balance with fungus. And when bacteria are in balance with fungus, fungus can't overgrow. However, when bacteria levels drop, so-called good bacteria, then the fungus levels can rise. Bacteria and yeast live in the body in balance, and typically one doesn't overgrow over the other. However, when we drink chlorinated water, or we drink brominated water, or we eat preserved foods, we can kill off our intestinal bacteria. Also, by ingesting a lot of refined carbohydrates and sugars, we can have fungus overgrow, because fungus and yeast are sugar feeders. Both of these in combination can result in fungus overgrowing in the body. So the answer is to take yourself some acidophilus and probiotics to build up that intestinal flora. Fermented foods are a wonderful way to build up the intestinal flora. So all of these strategies can help us rebuild our natural bacteria so the fungus kind of falls in line, all without drugs. Feeding the natural bacteria is a much better way.
American Longevity's Ultimate Killer Biotic incorporates a blend of mushroom extracts, bovine colostrum, and bee propolis, collected by killer bees from the surrounding Brazilian jungle. They used it to keep the hive free of bacteria, yeasts, and molds. And at $32.50 wholesale, you can boost your immune system without draining your bank account. Give your body what it needs to maintain a healthy balance of intestinal flora with Ultimate Killer Biotic from American Longevity. To order or to pick up American Longevity products, please call 1-831-425-3090. That number again is 1-831-425-3090.
Ties that nobody will wear. Perfume that nobody wants to smell. Whoa. This year, give the gift that will make the entire family happy. The gift that provides fun, excitement, and travel. This year, give the perfect gift for the holiday season. Give a new RV from RVs of Merit on Scotts Valley Drive in Scotts Valley. RVs of Merit has over $10 million in inventory available right now. So go buy RVs of Merit in Scotts Valley and see just how easy it is to get into a new Winnebago, Airbus, Dolphin, or Coachman. Check out the new diesel pushers, Bigfoots, toy boxes, and splash trailers. You can drive home in a brand new RV from RVs of Merit for monthly payments less than a new car. Or if you select a beautiful new towable, less than $200 a month. This year, give the gift of family fun and travel. Give a brand new RV from RVs of Merit on Scotts Valley Drive in beautiful Scotts Valley. And your whole family will say, ho, ho, ho.
The following is a special message from KSCO owner Michael Zwirling.
KSCO will soon celebrate 13 years of local ownership by the Zwirling family. Given the tremendous wave of consolidation that has overwhelmed local media, the survival of our standalone, independently owned commercial AM radio station is an accomplishment for which we are both proud and thankful. And though we have had numerous opportunities to sell out to the big media conglomerates, we have thus far resisted because we feel the Monterey Bay Area deserves an independent voice. We are extremely proud of the staff, personalities, and listeners who make KSCO the unique station it is, and it is certainly our intent to continue and improve. Today we ask for your help in our effort to improve local radio. First, please do as much business as you possibly can with KSCO advertisers, and let those businesses know that you heard them advertising on KSCO. Second, please tell everybody you know to give KSCO a listen. In your doing so, even more people will become aware of how much our local programming has to offer. And finally, please tell the business people you know to talk to the people who listen to talk, with a sponsorship of KSCO's local news, traffic, talk, and sports. After all, where else could they spend uninterrupted moments talking one-on-one with people like you? Call KSCO Sales for details. On behalf of the entire staff here at KSCO, I thank you for tuning in and wish you the happiest holiday season.
This is your favorite radio station, KSCO, Santa Cruz, California, 1080 on your dial.
And welcome back to hour number two. We're in the home stretch. 11 minutes remain in this program. If you're on hold, we will zoom through the phone calls here, but we'll get you on. Let's go to Caroline Carolyn or Caroline in High Street in Santa Cruz. You're on the air, Carolyn or Caroline.
Yes, it's Caroline.
Okay.
And I wanted to address several of the statements that have been made in, earlier in the show.
Okay.
I believe the phrase bang people over the head was bandied around at some point. And it has come to the point where we do have to do that. We have had a three-year fight with the Traffic and Planning Commission in order to bang them over the head to get stop signs installed to leave the accident rate on High Street. We have a constant banging over the head with the police department to enforce the no construction traffic coming up High Street. We have 18-wheelers plowing up here, barely able to make it round the corner en route to the university. And we really don't want to have to continue with this fight. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Do you have a quick answer? I guess that's a mic.
Yeah, actually, this is the second person that mentioned the issue of police enforcement. Of course, the problem there is really straightforward. It's money. We don't have enough police officers to patrol every street in terms of traffic impacts. We have put officers on High Street to deal with the construction traffic. But there's really a limit to how many officers. We need to come up with solutions that are more structural, that don't involve paying a police officer to stand somewhere in a corner, that give, you know, a clear alternatives for things to happen. So I don't have, I wish I had an answer. There's nobody that wouldn't love to have more police enforcement throughout the neighborhoods of Santa Cruz, not only for traffic, but all kinds of issues. We're down to the place where we're dealing with, we have four officers on duty at night in the city of Santa Cruz. Four officers. That's how bad our budget is. And so it's simply a money question. And nobody's against the idea of more traffic enforcement by police.
Quick, John, we've got to get to the other caller.
Well, I just wanted to ask, but given that we got 10 minutes to go here, I wanted to ask the vice mayor. He does seem to be well aware of the extent of the pain and suffering and the issue here. And so I just want to ask him directly, what does he propose doing about it as the vice mayor? What does he see? What action does he see personally taking? What kind of leadership does he see taking on this issue as the MTS is coming before him next Tuesday?
Try to do it in 15 seconds, Mike.
My 15-second answer is that when John said earlier we had two choices, we could reject the study or we could say what exactly we're going to do next to actually do make, you know, on this particular issue of the West Side traffic and do something about it, I think that's our obligation. And I plan to get push that the city actually make a commitment to develop an alternative transportation modality for the people to get to the campus, and that we actually develop that in the immediate future. And that without that, we're going nowhere. That's what I think we should be doing. And we have to get more. This, I just said it in an abstract way, but we have to say, is it bus rapid transit, and how much are we going to try, and what are our deadlines and our goals for that? And I think that has to happen next Tuesday.
Back to the phone lines. Elizabeth in Santa Cruz is our next caller. Elizabeth, you're on the air on KSCO.
Yeah, I've been told by a very prominent developer contractor owner who said that he can build and do anything he wants because of a lawsuit threat that he has hovering over the planning department and the city. So the planning department lets him build as he wishes.
Who is that prominent developer?
Well, I probably shouldn't disclose that, but what I'm saying.
Let me just say, KSCO doesn't allow us to use curse words on the air, so I'll just say directly, that is simply not the case. That somebody has some. I've been on the council virtually all this time, and even when I've been off, I follow this stuff pretty closely. Nobody has won any suit against the city of Santa Cruz or threatened one that would make us let them do whatever they want.
And Elizabeth, you're a dead
winner. I'm sorry, but it's a ridiculous comment.
Students would love to have a decent apartment to live in rather than an overpriced illegal garage conversion and parking in the front street or the front yard of the apartments.
Elizabeth.
It looks like a hillbilly zone.
Elizabeth,
you know.
Is your middle name Margaret?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Thanks for calling. Okay, next call will be Mike in Santa Cruz. Okay, Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, my name's Mike. I live on the west side of Santa Cruz, and I'd just like to start off by saying I am a huge supporter of UCSC and open space in Santa Cruz, and I really think that helps define the positive sides of Santa Cruz. And, you know, I'm also a supporter of mass transportation, but I'm having a little bit of difficulty believing that mass transit, bus, as spoken on this show today, will really solve the current problem. I think it may have, you know, put a dent in some of the continued growth that at the university, but to think that it's actually going to solve the problem, I think we've been looking at this in the city of Santa Cruz for...
What will, Mike, real quick?
Sure.
What will solve the problem?
Well, I was just, on one of your panel mentioned that they hope to see a university without cars. I was wondering, is there an example of that? And I think there's two choices. I don't think there's a lot of options on this problem. I think number one is stop university growth where it's at, perhaps reduce it, or an alternative access. I do not think that, you know, alternative transportation buses, namely, will make a significant dent in this problem. Okay.
You know, let me just mention, the college I went to, a student could not have a car, period. End of story.
We've heard that before in this program.
Actually, Davis, UC Davis hasn't banned all cars from campus, but the central part of UC Davis allows no cars. They allow buses, shuttles, and bicycles, and delivery vehicles, and that's it. And that's the kind of thing I think we should be doing at UC Santa Cruz.
We only have 5 minutes left, gentlemen. We want to get all our callers on. Diane, you're on.
You know, that is so unrealistic for UCSC.
You've got your radio turned on. Please turn it down while we talk here. We're getting feedback. Okay.
Don't you think it's a little unrealistic to think that UCSC would find a place for every student to live? Are they thinking about the next 20 to 30 years when the attendance could be 150,000?
It's not going to be 150,000.
Well, you know, who knows? They in the 60s didn't think it'd be what it is today.
In the 60s, when it was supposed to be 27,500, I remember.
You do?
Yeah.
And what is it now?
15,000.
And it's capped at 15,000 currently.
Are they going to helicopter them in? I mean, I think the city planners have really let us down. I mean, I do. A couple of things that Mike Rotkin said. He said it took 15 years to widen Mission. It took 10 years to even consider a bike lane. Now, is that a progressive thinking city council? Really? I pose that question. If it takes that long to get something like that, the people interested in something like that, do we have the right people there? It's like the hippies of the 60s.
Okay, thank you very much. Now let's go to Red in Santa Cruz. You're on the air on KSCO Red.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to inject a couple of points into the discussion here. One is that Mike indicated earlier that a large proportion of UC students are already taking public transit to get up there. I'd be curious to know what proportion of that group are the ones who park up in the Upper West Side and then take public transit from stops that are on the very fringes of the campus. That's one thing. The other thing I'd like to point out, which I haven't heard mentioned in the discussion here, is that Poganip, basically, as far as I know, is only accessible to people on foot. You can't really do much of anything there. You can't ride a bicycle. You can't ride a horse. It seems to be primarily a large homeless campground, as far as I can ascertain. And so I really am at a loss to understand people who sort of view it as a pristine wilderness that can't be violated by some sort of an access road. And I guess I can listen to comments.
Okay.
The
10-second response, Poganip is used by, you know, tens of thousands of people who do run and walk through the place, and they apparently love it and defend it. And the West Side parking issue was a huge problem a couple of years ago, but basically the city has now put in 2-hour parking limits throughout the entire Upper West Side, and so that's much less of an issue than it used to be. That's unfortunate. That's a pain in the butt for the people that live on the West Side that now have to have their guests get permits and everything. But that problem of students parking in the West Side neighborhood up on the hill has really pretty much gone away with a 2-hour parking.
We have 2 minutes for two callers here, one of which is John in Santa Cruz. You're on the air, John.
Yeah, I just want to say that parking problem is still a big problem for people on the Lower West Side, because it's just shoving the problem down.
Yes, that's true.
Further down the hill. And
that's true.
Obviously, this, I also think the housing situation and the alternative transportation are kind of red herrings, because whether they live on campus and drive downtown to shop or whether they live downtown and drive up to go to school, there's going to be traffic going through the West Side. And as Mike said earlier, the alternative modes of transportation are already at some of the highest rates recorded, and it's not solving the problem. And the big thing is that the last general plan stated that there was a big crisis and hoped it wouldn't get much worse, and now the current revision of which this master transportation study is supposed to be is basically saying, oh, problem's bad, we hope it doesn't get much worse. And
Sorry to do this. We got to take our last caller. That's Pat in Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Pat. You're on the air.
Okay, since I only have a few seconds, let me just cite two websites that would be of use to anybody interested. That's CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, and negative population growth. That's NPG. So far, you guys are just trying to put band-aids on growth, which cannot go on forever, and we know this. So let's just get honest about that. We got to stop growth, and we got to do it. Let me just quickly say this. We got to stop population growth, just trying to stop growth by not allowing amenities for growth is not the way to go about it, ultimately.
Mandatory sterilization. Thank you very much, Pat. Thank you very much, Mike Rotkin and John Aird, for being guests on the radio station
today. You know, one thing I do...
Thank you to Rosemary and Kay Zwirling for putting this show together.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you to Noah for engineering the program. And if you want to hear this program, it's going to be rebroadcast tonight between the hours of 10 p.m. and midnight on AM 1080 KSEO. Soon after tomorrow, you will be able to click on Saturday Special on our KSEO.com website, and you can hear it on demand. Go ahead.
And quickly, let me just say, people who are interested in this issue should come to the City Council meeting next Tuesday evening, because that's going to be some real discussion about this issue. I'm sure John and people that agree with him and the supporters will be there. Other folks that have concerns about the Pogan, no doubt, will be there, and the City Council is going to try and do what we can to address this issue.
Okay.
That's all, folks.
KSEO Santa Cruz, KOMY, KSEO Santa Cruz. Here's USA News in progress.
In the Big Apple, the snow plows have been on the roads around the clock.
Plow drivers say they're proud of what they've done so far in this blizzard.
Well, you know, you got some people that are really, really in a hurry out there. However, the way we do it, we take our time at it and we let everybody take their place on the road, and we're just trying to get that snow up. You know, so yeah, it's kind of rough. I'd say let us do our job and don't cut in front of us.
Traffic's still moving well in major roads in the city. Of course, there's still a long way to go in this blizzard. Glenn Shuck in New York.
And in southern Pennsylvania, things are so bad, even winter-hardened veterans are having a tough time negotiating hilly, ice, and snow-covered streets.
I grew up in upstate New York, so I thought I could handle this and, you know, wouldn't be a problem, but... You know, I came out this far, and it looks like I'm stuck here now.
Winds anywhere from 20 to 40 miles an hour are blistering today near the coast from New York City north to Boston. They're expected to cause some coastal flooding and beach erosion. They're also blowing around the snow, creating blizzard-like conditions with lousy visibility. At least six people have been killed in traffic accidents that are being blamed on the slick roads or the poor visibility. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. I travel a lot and stay in hotels. And when I put my bare feet down on a hotel carpet, I want to know it's clean. Luxury hotels use Orrick vacuums. You can bet they'll pass the barefoot test. Orrick vacuums lift the pile and make carpet look years younger and, yes, feel soft under your bare feet. I'll send you one to use for 30 days. If you don't love it, you don't keep it. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Give your skin a break from the outbreaks of psoriasis and eczema using Lomalux. Dermatologist developed and clinically proven, Lomalux uniquely works inside the body, healing from the inside out. Lomalux psoriasis and Lomalux eczema are different because they're taken orally by mouth just once a day. You don't have to use messy creams and ointments. Put Lomalux in to clear your skin. Ask for Lomalux psoriasis or Lomalux eczema at Walgreens and many other fine pharmacies and drugstores.
2 weeks ago today, college student Drew Shadeen went missing in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where police captain Mike Kirby hopes for help from residents.
Law enforcement wants to continue to stress the importance that landowners throughout the region get out and check their property. Get out and take an extra second to walk your property, check your outbuildings to see if you can find anything of interest.
The investigation into Shadeen's disappearance is pretty much an inside job today. Detectives are working to piece together a mosaic of clues, and Kirby says there are no plans for an outside search today unless some new information is developed. There have been media reports citing unnamed sources close to the case, which mentioned Shadeen's blood being found in the suspect's car and a knife sheath discovered in the parking lot of the mall from which she was abducted November 22nd. Prosecutors say some of the reports are wrong, but won't say which ones. The accused kidnapper is still behind bars on $5 million bail. His lawyer says he's not talking to investigators. This is USA Radio News.
Hi, it's the Ovaltine man. Kids all across America drink Ovaltine with milk because...
we love its rich chocolate taste.
But why do so many adults drink it?
Rich chocolate Ovaltine is high in calcium and antioxidants, like vitamins A, C, and E. Plus, it has iron I need, which I can't get from Nesquik powder or milk alone.
I drink Ovaltine every day. It's chock-filled with 17 vitamins and minerals. Nesquik powder doesn't come close.
So no matter how old you are, there are great nutritional reasons to drink rich chocolate Ovaltine.
More Ovaltine, please!
Between crummy weather on the East Coast and not quite rosy economic news coming from the Labor Department's November employment report, investors were in retreat Friday.
Chip giant Intel added to the less than rosy tone on Wall Street. Many expected Intel to raise sales guidance for the quarter, but the world's largest chip maker did not. Intel also surprised Wall Street, saying it will take a $600 million charge. The high-tech Dow component finished 4% lower. Shares of Caterpillar bucked the selling trend. The heavy-duty equipment maker got a boost from a Smith Barney upgrade. Shares of Caterpillar climbed 2% on the day. I'm Conway Gittins at the New York Stock Exchange.
As for the major stock indexes, the Dow was off 68 points to end the week at 98.63, while NASDAQ dropped 31 to close at 1938. The S&P 500 finished the week at 1062 after shedding 9 points. There's more news at usaradio.com. I'm Kurt Lewis with news on the USA Radio Network.
Less music, more talk.
News Talk 1080 KSCO.
Good morning. You are tuned to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It is 5 minutes past noon on this Saturday, December 6, 2003, getting ever so closer to Christmas. I'm Noah James in here at the station with your Central Coast weather forecast for today. Periods of rain with highs in the mid-50s to mid-60s, southerly winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, rain is likely with lows in the 40s to lower 50s. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast for today, southeasterly winds 5 to 15 knots with wind waves 2 feet and a westerly swell 6 to 15 feet at 14 seconds. There is a high surf advisory for today. It is currently 57.